We're glad to have you aboard for this Agriculture Today. All who are involved in Kansas agriculture are well aware that the Conservation Reserve Program has been a staple in this state. What we'll talk about now is a new study out of K-State's Agricultural Economics Department, which has coupled the CRP to cropland area changes over time, and there's some interesting information coming from this work. Joining us now is K-State agricultural economist Nathan Hendricks, who co-authored this study. But CRP's impact, what were you trying to garner here as you put together this research, Nathan?
Yeah, so there were a lot of news headlines, especially coming out of 2008 and high commodity prices, about expanding cropland area and what contributed to that expansion in cropland area. And some of the studies that looked at that question would come to really different conclusions because they were looking at different data sources. So some would use data from remote sensing, which is from satellite data, and would say that the cropland expansion was really large, and others would look at other types of statistics out of USDA and say, no, it's not that large. And so there was a lot of debate just how much cropland expansion there was. So one, I wanted to go in and just compare data sources and just try to understand how big was the impact likely to be, and were some of these remote sensing studies reliable or not? And also then try to understand what were the main factors that were driving that cropland expansion, and especially trying to understand what was the role of CRP, which was often neglected in much of that discussion.
So how did you get after these questions? This is a pretty deep subject, actually, and it has lots of offshoot factors going on. How did you approach it?
Yeah, so there's a data source that wasn't often used in these studies, but it's also put out by USDA, is designed specifically looking for changes in cropland area. And this data source not only looks at what's the change in cropland area, but also looks what did it transition from. So they'll specifically say how much land went from CRP to cropland production, how much land went from cropland to CRP, same thing for pasture or rangeland to cropland. And so they break all this out. Now, one reason all the news headlines didn't use that data source, even though it'd probably be the most reliable data source for looking at it, is it's really lagged in coming out. So the 2012 data didn't come out until 2015 or 2016. And so, people that were trying to understand this in 2009, 2010 simply couldn't even use that data. But now it's available. So went in and dug into that data a little bit to try to better understand some of these other what people were getting from other sources.
All right. Well, you did so, and you found a correlation between CRP acreage and the acreage in crop production, and they fluctuate sort of in step, don't they?
Yeah, that's right. Certainly, as you go back in history, and if you look at over 5-year periods, changes in cropland area, most of the changes in cropland area since at least the mid-1990s, most of the changes in cropland area would be directly related to how much change in CRP there was. And there's not a lot of change due to other factors, due to changes in pasture and cropland. And what's interesting, if you look at between 2007 and 2012, we did have an increase in cropland area, but really all of that could be attributed to a reduction in CRP. Hmm. So if you look at transitions between pasture and cropland, you do have a fair bit of pasture going to cropland, but you also have some cropland going to pasture. And on net, that about zeros out between 2007 and 2012. So on net, all of the expansion in cropland was due to a reduction in CRP.
More so than prices paid for commodities and so forth, CRP was in fact a driver. It's all intertwined, understood.
Yeah, right. And that's the hard thing is it's definitely all intertwined. So CRP is the main driver. Now what determines CRP is the next question. And you've got two different interests in that. There's one, the farmer. And as prices were high after 2008, certainly they were less interested in CRP, or at least would demand a higher rental rate if they're going to put that land in CRP. And then the other is you have the government, who sets the enrollment cap on CRP in each farm bill, and that enrollment cap tends to change as commodity prices change as well.
And in fact, as your paper depicts, that cap has been ratcheted down more or less over time, has it not?
Yeah. So especially in 2008, they started bringing that enrollment cap down at a time when commodity prices were high. And so in the 2008 Farm Bill, they were lowering the enrollment cap in CRP, which is a key reason why we saw a decrease in CRP acreage. And then the 2014 bill even further really dramatically reduces that enrollment cap, so that we go from a peak in 2007, we were about 36 million acres of CRP, and then the enrollment cap will put us down below 25 million acres in 2017.
You did account for the impact of the hike in ethanol production from the mid-2000s on and the influence there on land use. But again, CRP trumps ethanol production as an influence, it sounds.
Yeah, so, you know, the story that's usually told is ethanol production led to higher commodity prices, which led farmers to convert grassland into cropland with negative environmental consequence. That was usually the story that's out there. But if you look at the data, I mean, there certainly is some conversions of pasture going to cropland, but the big story is a reduction in CRP, mm-hmm. and that's coming from, again, from less farmer demand. So some of that is linked to commodity prices, which you could link to ethanol, but also a big driver of that is the government policy and the Farm Bill. So it's not really quite as straightforward of a story, mm-hmm. and you could certainly imagine that if the Farm Bill would have kept CRP acreage enrollment cap high and would have tried to keep land in CRP, that even with ethanol production, we might have had very little expansion in cropland area since 2008. So the story could have been very different with a different CRP policy.
What you come down to in your conclusions is that CRP is serving as a commodity supply control.
Yeah, I think there at least there certainly appears to be some objective of using CRP to manage grain production. And you're starting to see it in discussions of the new Farm Bill, a lot of discussions about now bringing that enrollment cap back up. No surprise, commodity prices are low. And so there's some idea of if we can take land out of crop production, putting it into CRP, that'll put some upward pressure on prices. And so you see the movement in the CRP enrollment cap determined by prices, which would seem to meet the objectives of supply control, not only environmental interests.
And as a footnote to that, and you mentioned this prior to us going on the air today, that the acceptance rate for CRP bids very recently hit a low. And so as we would think about CRP's role expanding, so too that acceptance rate would likely go back up.
Yeah. You know, one of the challenges in setting that enrollment cap in the Farm Bill is that prices can change pretty rapidly, as we found out. So 2014 Farm Bill's established and commodity prices are very high. And so that enrollment cap was set low for 2016. And then we get to 2016 and commodity prices are very low. And farmers were wanting to put land into CRP. And so we saw the acceptance rate nationally was only 22%. So of the acres that farmers offered to be put into CRP, only 22% were accepted.
Last year.
Last year in 2016, right. And so there's a lot of demand for it right now, but the legislation simply won't allow that to change because it was set at a time of high commodity prices.
So, and there's so much more to the study, we don't have time to dig into all of it today, but what do you hope will be the concluding message that might get to policymakers as well as other parties interested in the role and the prospects of CRP?
Yeah, I think we just need to be clear about thinking through what objectives we want to achieve with CRP, especially changing the enrollment cap with changes in commodity prices. Especially when you're doing it on a farm bill and prices can change pretty rapidly, that can be a bit of a hard thing to establish and to define exactly where we want that to be. And we might also want to be thinking about, you know, there was a lot of negative press with environmental implications because of land conversions. And so could we offset some of that by maintaining CRP even when prices are high. You know, maybe some land needs to come out of CRP, but at least maintain expenditures into CRP, the same expenditures. And so there has been a lot of work over time thinking about how to target CRP into the most environmentally sensitive areas. I think we need to be thinking about how we target CRP over time as well, and how we want to adjust CRP as commodity prices change.
Well, we might see a reinvigoration of CRP as the new farm bill takes shape. It's certainly on the docket for discussion, and this kind of information will help lend to the dialogue there, to be sure. It's a good read. Nathan, thanks for summarizing some of the high points and the key findings that you discovered here. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Eric.
He's an agricultural economist at Kansas State University. Once more, they looked over many years' time and data and tied together the influence of the Conservation Reserve Program on cropland area. Nathan Hendricks, our guest on this part of Agriculture Today. And we'll return with more after this. You're listening to the K-State Radio Network.